Today's lesson is going to be one of the more challenging ones. It deals somewhat rigorously with the axioms of set theory. So it's going to be some work for you, but it's worth it because you'll really learn something in this process. So in a rigorous treatment of set theory, such as one encounters in an advanced course in logic, there is a detailed consideration of the axioms of set theory. As indicated in the early lectures, this is part and parcel of the way that mathematics is done for the record. It's the way we ensure that no logical inconsistencies will arise in our future work, and it's the way that we lay the ground rules for our subject. The present book constitutes your first exposure to rigorous mathematical thinking, and it would be somewhat overwhelming for you to have to wade through a thorough treatment of the axioms of set theory at this time. We have instead been studying a naive treatment of set theory. Nonetheless, we should now like to briefly treat the formal axioms and discuss some of the more significant axioms that arise frequently in advanced mathematics. So these are called the axioms of Zermelo-Frankel set theory, named after the logicians Zermelo and Frankel, who lived about 125 years ago. And there are 8 of these axioms. I'm going to state them for you, and then I'll discuss each one and try to explain what it says. The axiom of extensionality says that for all x, x is in A if and only if x is in B, means the same thing as A equals B. Now, you've seen this idea at the very early stages of our discussion of set theory. It simply says that two sets A and B are equal if and only if they have the same elements. The sum axiom, given a set, collection S of sets, there exists a set C, so that for all x, x is in C if and only X is in one of the sets that's in the collection S. So this just says that if you're given a collection of sets, you can take their union and form a new set, which is larger than all the given sets. Most of these axioms aren't very surprising, but there's a few that are a little tricky. The power set axiom says given a set A, there exists a set B, so that for all C, C is an element of B if and only if it's a subset of A. So this just says given a set A, you can form its power set. Now, the axiom of regularity is one of the interesting ones because it was designed to rule out Russell's paradox. In other words, it rules out the possibility that a set can be an element of itself. And its statement is rather technical. It says if A is not empty, then there exists an X, and that X is an element of A, and for all Y, if Y is an element of X, then Y is not an element of A. And it's not very difficult, it's possible to use the axiom of regularity and write down a short proof that no set can be an element of itself. And you can look that up on Google if you like. Axioms for cardinals. If A is a set, then script K of A denotes the set of all sets that are set theoretically isomorphic to A. The set K of A is sometimes called the cardinality of A or the cardinal number corresponding to A. And the axiom says that KA equals KB if and only if card A equals card B. So this just sets up the equivalence relation, which we describe in words as same cardinality as. The axiom of infinity says there exists a set A so that phi is, so that the empty set is an element of A, and for all B, B is an element of A implies that B union, the set containing B, is an element of A. This is a device for constructing an infinite set. In fact, it's the way we construct the natural numbers. We'll say more about it later in the course. The most technical axiom is the axiom schema of replacement, but it says something very important. It says that we can construct new sets in the way that we usually describe new sets. Namely, we usually describe a set as the set of all x such that some property holds for x. And that's basically what the axiom schema of replacement says. It says let Pxy be a property of x and y. If for all x, for all y, for all z, x is an A, and Pxy and Pxz implies y equals z, then there exists a set B so that for all y, y is in B if and only if there exists an x, so that x is an A and Pxy is true. And you'll have to think about this a little bit to realize that all it says is we can form sets with the set builder notation that we usually use. The most dramatic axiom, the one that's caused the most confusion and the most paradoxes and the most study, is the last one, the axiom of choice. For it, it's very simple, really. It says for any set A, there is a function f from the power set of A to A So that for any non-empty subset B of A, we have F at B as an element of B. This simply says that given a set, then you could pick an element of any subset. That's all it says. But it has dramatic consequences that we'll consider a little later on in the course. The advantage of the way we have stated the axioms here is that the actual statements do not involve much English at all. The statements are also very brief, but it requires some effort to understand what they say. To aid in this process, we now give a brief informal description of what each axiom says. There'll be some repetition here of what I've already said, but repetition's a good way to learn. The axiom of extensionality mandates that two sets are equal precisely when they have the same elements. In our earlier treatment, we took this property as a definition. The sum axiom specifies that if we are given a collection of sets, then the union of these sets exists. Again, in the interest of simplicity, we treated this idea in an earlier lecture. Lurking in the background here is the fact, to be explored briefly at the end of this section, that we cannot allow the existence of sets that are too large. If we do, then certain paradoxes result, such as Russell's paradox. Thus, certain of our set theory axioms specify the ways in which you are allowed to form new sets. The power set axiom says that if we are given a set A, then the power set P of A also exists. The comments in the last paragraph about creating new sets also apply here. The axiom of regularity is slightly more subtle. Consider the set S of all sets that can be described with fewer than 50 words. That S is an element of itself. Such considerations could lead to nasty paradoxes, such as Russell's paradox. For this reason, we want to rule out sets that are elements in themselves. As an exercise, you may try to prove using the axiom of regularity that if A is a set, then A is not an element of A. The axiom for cardinals addresses another existence problem. Given a set S, we wish to consider the set of sets, each of which has the same cardinality as S. This is an equivalence class, with the equivalence relation being set theoretic isomorphism. But we do not know in advance that the equivalence class exists. The axiom for cardinals mandates just that. Again, this is one of our allowed methods for creating new, possibly large sets. Some versions of set theory disallow extremely large sets by not including the axiom for cardinals. The axiom of infinity specifies the existence of a set that is set theoretically isomorphic to a proper subset of itself. We know from section 4.5 that this is equivalent to postulating the existence of an infinite set. In fact, our formulation of the axiom of infinity is very closely related to the classical construction of ordinal numbers, and more specifically of the natural numbers themselves. And we'll discuss this in the next chapter. The axiom of replacement is perhaps the most technical axiom, but it's also the one that is used most often as our device for passing from the general to the specific. It is our means of specifying a set as the collection of objects that satisfy a certain property. The first line of the axiom specifies that P is a property that can be treated. The second line specifies that there exists a set B that is the set of elements that satisfy property P. Simple enough. The axiom of choice is perhaps the axiom that has been the richest source of ideas and also of confusion in all of set theory. Its intuitive statement is simplicity itself. Let S be a set, then there is a function F from the power set of S to S that assigns to each non-empty subset of S an element of itself. While quite a plausible axiom, it is a metatheorem of mathematical logic that it is impossible to specify the function that assigns to each non-empty subset of the real numbers an element of itself. By contrast, with S equals the natural numbers, we can do it. If A is a subset of the naturals, then let F and A be the least element of A. We shall prove in our treatment of the natural numbers in the next chapter that every subset of the natural numbers does indeed have a least element. So this choice function F makes good sense and does the job. Think for a moment why a function defined by it in this way will not work for the real numbers. We shall spend the next lecture discussing the axiom of choice and its consequences. We'd close this section with a brief mention of Russell's paradox. There are many paradoxes that fall under this rubric, and Russell's was not the first. A nice discussion of these matters appears in Supi's book and Yek's book. So here's Russell's paradox. Let S be the set of all sets which are not elements of themselves. Most sets fit this description, although we gave an example of a set which is an element of itself in the discussion of the axiom of regularity. Is S an element of itself? If F is S of an element is an element of itself, then by definition, S is not an element of itself. On the other hand, if S is not an element of itself, then it must be an element of itself, since S has as elements all sets which are not elements of themselves. Thus, S can neither be an element of itself nor not be an element of itself. And that's paradoxical. Russell's paradox was first communicated by Russell to Frege just weeks before the latter's definitive book on the foundations of set theory was to appear in print. The paradox called into question Frege's and everybody else's approach to set theory. It is because Russell's paradox that modern versions of set theory, such as that given by eight axioms above, set very careful restrictions on which sets we may construct and which we may not. In particular, the set S of Russell's paradox is too large to exist in the version of Zermelo-Frankel set theory that was discussed earlier today. The concept of class has been developed to deal with objects that are too large to be considered a part of set theory. See these two references for a discussion of classes. We close this section by summarizing the discussion. In a formal treatment of set theory, one begins with the eight axioms specified above and with the empty set and systematically develops the properties of sets. This is done, for instance, in Soupy's book. In the present text, we have given an intuitive treatment of set theory that parallelized the classical rigorous treatment but is more accessible. Thank you for your patience and thanks for listening.